You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Inside Leverage, your gateway to the fascinating realm of the Miami Dolphins. Join us as we delve deep into the team's dynamic Super Bowl journey. We invite you to share your most scorching takes, unwind, and relish in our captivating experience. Tonga Bailoa,
blocked by Armstead, going deep, he's got him!
Let's give him the proper introduction. Daniel. Oyer Fousey.
What's going on, man? Brother? What's going on?
I'm good. Long time. How y'all been?
Good,
all
man.
Right, man. Thanks for coming back, bro, and joining us. I know that you got a lot of stuff going on in the off season. What you been up to, bro?
Oh man, not as much as you think, man. Really? Obviously, you know, things about to heat up in the next couple of weeks. You know, got the combine next week. Obviously, free agency starts in a little less than a month. But it's kind of a downtime. You know, the season just ended. Just kind of biding time until the real fun starts. You know, we're gonna get into
all that. Oh yeah.
And it looks like Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel are going to be out there. So you're going to be out there to kind of interview them, see where their direction of the team will be.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, they're going to be in Indy for the combine next week. I'll be out there as well. You know, we're supposed to talk to Mike McDaniel, Chris Greer. So it's a good time to kind of see what the latest updates are. Obviously with Christian Wilkins, a lot of the free agents, Tua. The plans for the offseason, the draft. So it's always fun. I was like, you know, you have the season, which is fun in and of itself, and then you have the offseason. You have, like, various offseason trips. You know, I was in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. You get to catch up with some folks, you know, talk to some front office executives, coaches, scouts, see other people in the industry. The Combine is, like, you know, another one of those events. It's like kind of like the premier offseason event in my eyes because, you know, you got all the agents, the coaches, the GMs. You know, so I'm excited to, you know, see a lot of folks and obviously, you know, got to work there, but it's definitely going to be a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, man. So, like, speaking of that, let's jump right into it, bro. Talk to me. What have you heard about Wilkins? Because that seems to be like the hot topic right now. You know, I think there was a report that just came out. I think it was yesterday that off of ESPN saying that they were willing to negotiate with him or not willing to negotiate, but they're willing to retain him.
Yeah, with the franchise tag. Yeah.
Right. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, you guys know, like, last year, last summer, they were talking. There were a lot of talks, you know. A lot of Wilkins' peers got, you know, lucrative deals, and he wasn't the one. He was, like, the lone one who didn't get the deal. And it looks like along the way there was some, you know, there was some gap that couldn't be bridged. And you know, my guess is that it's probably with the guarantees or whatnot. Usually that's what it's about, the average annual value, just like little stuff like that, where they just weren't able to kind of find that common ground. You know, they're definitely going to try to work something out before they start a free agency. But if not, you know, according to the ESPN report, they're going to franchise tag him, which is really interesting. You know, I wrote about that earlier in the week about how, you know, it's really not like the most favorable option for the Dolphins right now because, you know, we've talked, you know, you guys know it's been brought up numerous times. They're scheduled to be or projected to be $50 million over the cap. No, they have to be under that by the time free agency starts, and they will be. But if you franchise tag Christian Wilkins, that's $20 million or $21 million on the cap for 2024. So that makes it even tougher. Like, you already have to clear, like, more than $50 million so you can you know, keep some of your guys, sign some guys. You know, if you franchise tag Christian Wilkins, you know, that's more than $70 million that you probably have – that you most definitely have to clear out. So it just makes keeping Connor Williams, Rob Hunt, and all these other guys tougher. We'll see, man. We'll see if they usually, you know, sometimes these deadlines kind of spark some last minute stuff. Obviously, you know, I'm sure Wilkins' agent is probably going to be in Indianapolis, so it's going to be a good time to kind of for him and Greer to talk things out and see if they can, you know, reach a common ground. But if not, you know, the good thing about the tag is that it gives you some extra time to work on a deal. Because once you're tagged, you have until mid-July to strike out a long-term deal. If not, then the player has to play on the franchise tag. But it, like for the Dolphins, it's not really like the position you want to be in, like franchising Christian Wilkins and trying to retain the rest of your guys and like build around. It's just not really what you want to do right now if you're them.
Hold on, Wally. Before we go on, one other thing as far as a salary. You know, as far as the cap is concerned, you also have to reserve money for the draft.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, unless they trade the picks, because you know that's what they've been doing the past couple of years. But I don't know if they want to do that now. Like, I think it's they traded the picks for a couple of years. It's time to get some young cheap guys in here. You know, for when some of these older vets head out. So yeah, you have to save a couple million dollars for the draft as well. So I mean, in the next month, like we're gonna see a lot of reports come out saying, you know, the Dolphins have restructured Tyreek Hill's contract. They restructured Jalen Ramsey's contract. They restructured, you know, Bradley Chubb's contract in order to to get under the cap and be able to like have some space to make moves. So that's expected. It's just kind of a matter of like how much money do they need to actually clear out.
Yeah, listen, we can always talk about Christian Wilkins, and we was talking about giving them 16 in the biscuit, giving us some extra money, but it's downtime. So now we got to speculate and have some fun. We saw Javon Holland put a little meme out there, talk about a little gift, however you want to call it. Well, a little money roll, you know what I'm talking about? So we want to know, we were talking about the scale of how much money you got to pay Javon Holland.
Oh, man. Let me see.
What you giving Javon Holland in his contract? I have him at a top three safety, the 10 or 12 mil, you know what I'm saying?
It's going to cost more than that for a top three safety, brother. It's going to cost more than that for a top three safety. If you say me top three safety.
You give him 12 in a biscuit. Give him 12 in a biscuit. That's the guarantees in there. You feel me?
I don't know. I was going to say top three. If you say me a top three safety.
Top five. Because
I'm telling you, it's going to be a little bit more than
you got to give him 10 mil.
Close to it, you might have to. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he's up next. He's one of those guys that's up next. Like we talked about, like that 2021 draft has been so good to them. You know, they got Waddle, they got Jalen Phillips, they got Holland. I feel like I'm missing out some guys. I feel like they definitely got some more out that draft. But it's like it's time to pay up. And Holland is different than Waddle and Phillips because Holland is a second round pick, so he doesn't have that fifth year option. So like you know, we talk about the pay Waddle, trade Waddle. So I'm sure we're going to get into all that and whatnot. But like with him and JP, like you can wait a couple years. Like honestly, you could probably wait like 2 to 3 years if you want to like go that far with the franchise tag as well. Holland, you can't really do that. Like he's entering the final year of his deal. The price only increases. Like we talk about that with Wilkins, with Rob Hunt, like the price only increased for them, you know, this time last year, like the price has only increased. So I'm an advocate for like you get it out the way. I'm also an advocate for you pay Waddle right now and get that out the way. But yeah, we'll see because, you know, obviously it was a tough year for him. It wasn't the year that a lot of fans expected. It obviously wasn't the year that he expected. I know just talking with him, that knee injury was like very bothersome. Like there was like whenever I would ask him about it, he'd be like, yeah, like we're trying to get there. And this was a guy who was like, I never had a major injury in my life. So like, I kept on trying to explain to people like Jerome had one sprained MCL, Javon had two. So now people are like, why can't he play? And I'm like, guys, like the knees and then it's like the basis of everything he does.
It's a little important. I don't know.
So you got two of those, like that's tough. So obviously he was very frustrated as well. But you know, when he's healthy, when he's out there, like the way they talked about him, like they say he's the quarterback of the defense. Like everyone says he's the quarterback of the defense. He gets everybody lined up. The splash plays weren't there. But that doesn't mean that he's not making an impact and that he's not a good player. He's a very good player. So I'm an advocate of like, if you can take care of him right now. Like, it's time to start taking care of these young guys who, you know, we all talk about Chris Greer, Is he, can he nail the draft picks? He got some good ones in the pipeline. So now it's time to lock those guys up for the future. So I'm an advocate of it. Obviously, there's higher priorities for them. But if you can, it's time to get those young guys locked up for the next couple of years.
Hey, the other, Junior, before you go, you're going to be very happy with this. The other, one of the other draft picks from the 2021 draft, and Junior's going to be very happy about this.
Don't.
You ready?
Don't.
Liam Eichenberg.
Hey, I got to say something.
Do it.
I mean, Liam kind of made him some money this year. I'm not going to lie.
He's a big. Hey, that's a big. I think that's the biggest fan of Lee Eichenberg right here.
I'm not gonna lie. He kind of like
he did.
Like he wasn't perfect. He wasn't great, but he played through a lot of injuries.
I give him
he
that.
Showed, yeah. He showed some versatility. He was a guy who, if they needed him to play center one day, he played center. If they needed him to move over to right guard, he did it. If you need him to go over to left, I mean, he's played every position on the offensive line at this point. So I'm not saying he's a starting caliber offensive lineman, but if it's a guy who, hey, you're in a pinch, you need him as a reserve interior offensive lineman, like, hey, I mean, you could do worse, I guess. I mean, it could have been really bad. Like, it could have been really bad if Liam, like he settled in that center once he got a couple starts in, and it wasn't perfect, but he showed some value. So he made him some money. Like, I'm not doing any sourcing or anything like that. But, like, in the back of my mind, I was like, hey, I could see, like, they give him a little 2-year, 3-year extension, and it's nothing crazy, but it's just kind of like, hey, you're a top reserve. Like, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not saying I talked to anybody, but I'm just saying, like, when I was kind of doing my position reviews, I was kind of looking at the state of the offensive line. I'm like, hey, I can see that. Like, I can see them being like, hey, give you a little bone, like, appreciate your efforts. We're going to keep you on as a reserve lineman. And if we need you to step in to start, hey, we can count on you for it in a pinch.
Yeah, we've actually talked about that. Go ahead, Junior. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, definitely a fringe starter. But hopefully they'll give him a contract, because if they do, you know, I'm going to go crazy. But let's focus. I want to focus in on what you said about Waddle, because I have a theory that I felt like might be something that they'll consider before I ask my question. With Waddle, I think between Waddle and Phillips, between them two, I think Waddle has been the most consistent. And I think that's the guy you would kind of want to get the contract done, like, now, maybe this year. Mm-hmm. And then with Phillips, you know, he showed the high upside. He can be a guy that can get the 10 plus sacks, but certain situations happen. You know, maybe you want to kind of give him that fifth year option to see if he can be consistent for the next 2-3 years, and then give him that contract that he's deserving of. So I can see something like that. So here's my question. How do you measure a player like Christian, like Waddle, like Javon? How do a guy like Chris Green and Brandon Shore build up a contract? Is it based on the statistics? Is it more than that? Is it based on leadership? Like, in your opinion, how do you formulate a contract that's deserving of those for the player? That's going to help us out. And maybe the player might consider, like, hey, based on this, Pro Bowler and all that stuff, I deserve this contract. What are your thoughts? I don't know if I'm all over the place with that.
No. I mean, you take into account everything, and that's what they do. I mean, you take out, you know, their pass production. You paying them, you know, it's like we always talk about, like, you're paying them for past performance or paying them for, you know, future. I mean, it's just a little bit of both. Like, you reward them for what they've done and for what you think they're going to do in the future. You take into account, you know, what you have at other positions. You take into account the market. Well, Waddle and Phillips, it's really interesting because, obviously, you know, they have the fifth-year option. I think the deadline is, like, May 1st or something like that. It's in May to exercise the option. And my guess is they'll do it for both. Obviously, Phillips is a little tough because he's coming off the Achilles. So that's tough. And I think that kind of, like, it really sucks for him because – this is a year where, you know, he was breaking out. And this is probably the year where you're like, all right, it's time to lock this guy up. But, you know, I think that they probably have to hold off for a year, see how he comes back, maybe not so much this year, but the next year, because that's when he's really going to be back to himself. Like, keep in mind, like, Nick Needham, it took him about a year to come back from the Achilles. And he was mentioning, and I was talking to him, and he was like, hey, like, you don't really feel yourself until that second year. So I think that kind of pushes the timeline down for him. Waddle, you know, again, I know this week has been all about Trey Waddle. I think that's ludicrous in the words of Tyreek Hill. I think that if somehow you can lock him up right now, you do it. And you, in my eyes, you pay him like a number one receiver, because that's what he's going to be, you know, in 2-3 years when, you know, maybe Tyreek isn't on the roster. Obviously, you know, again, there's higher priorities, and right now at wide receiver, you know, there might not be a better bargain than Jalen Waddle, because he's giving you 1,000-plus yards in big plays, and he's making, peanuts right now. So I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I'm just saying, like, if I was kind of running the Dolphins, if I was, you know, playing Madden GM, that's how I would handle it right now. But it's going to be interesting, because there are a couple guys up. You know, they have to balance the up and comers, the guys that are you know, reaching the end of their rookie deals, and then you also have, you know, some established veterans who have these really high cap hits, and they're still, you know, on the roster for the next year, two or three.
Perfect. Listen, I got another question for you, and it's as far as one of the veteran guys, one of the guys that has been arguably one of the best corners that we've ever had here in Xavier Howard. He's been communicating through social media with the little Usher video and all that. Have you heard anything, or do you have a sense of where what's going to happen here? I mean, I personally have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
We all think we know where this is going, but we want to hear your opinion where this is going to probably end up.
I was gonna say, I think my colleague Barry reported a bit on it. You know, he said, you know, he, to this point, he hasn't necessarily been asked to take a pay cut, but there is, you know, kind of a belief. I'm trying to make sure I get the actual wording right, so that's why. Excuse me, that's why I'm.
Looking no, at. Take your time. It's better to be right than you know.
Yeah, I don't want to come out here and start misreading.
Exactly.
Misreading.
No, because we heard this.
You have a bad take. I hit the coach's ugly Yankee shirt. Don't worry about it.
Because then Barry's gonna be hitting me up.
That's right.
He said an associate of Howard's said the sense is that Howard is open to outside options and would be reluctant to take a big pay cut. And then he also sourced different source that said, to this point, he hasn't been asked to take a pay cut. So obviously, you know, X has a really big pay cut. He has no more guaranteed money. I asked Chris Greer at the end of season news conference whether he expected him to be on the roster, and he gave a very non-committal answer, saying that X is like any other guy on the team. We're going to see, we're going to assess that, you know, afterward, and go from there. And obviously, that was the politically correct answer. But hey, if we asked him, is Tua going to be on the roster next year? Well, I don't know. Maybe he would have said the same thing for Tua, because I don't know. Chris Greer does a good job of talking in a way that, and talking in non-absolutes, and really all front office.
Yeah, he's just being political.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. But obviously, that raised a lot of antennas, and the fact that, you know, X himself. You know, somebody asked him, you know, would you be willing to take a pay cut to stay here? And he said, would you take a pay cut to stay at your job? I wouldn't take a, I don't know. Well, I don't know. The journalism industry is kind of rough, but I would be reluctant to take a pay cut to keep my job. You know, X said that essentially. So it feels like a divorce is imminent. And me personally, it's just my personal. I don't love it. I understand, like, getting, you know, the fact that there is some. Well, I don't love it for multiple reasons. I don't love it, one, because I think that X played really well this season when he was healthy, and obviously that's the big thing with him, like the health. You know, he had another season that was kind of cut short or, you know, derailed because of injury. And I think now he's 31. He's entering his age 31 or 32 season. So you do have to say, like, hey, at what point do we see that kind of decline? You know, he might not be, you know, the ex of a couple years back when he was, you know, in the running for defensive player of the year and got 10 interceptions. But I said, like, he's still a starting cornerback in the NFL. He's still a very capable cornerback in the NFL. And the question is, you know, at that price, because I think he has like a $23 million cap hit or whatever, like the And he's not owed any more money. It's like pretty much not owed any money. So the question is, like, can they reach, you know, an agreement on maybe a restructured deal, which obviously would probably have to be in the form of a pay cut. And obviously X has done a very good job of getting more money from the team the past couple of years. So he really is not under any, you know, there's really no reason for him to take less money. But I don't like that, because I don't like it, because I know that they're in a tough cap spot. But I feel like cutting X just creates more holes for you. And obviously, you know, when you cut players, like, that's just kind of natural. But I'm not a fan of that, because you still don't know what you have in Cam Smith. Maybe you do have to kind of trust that Cam Smith is going to step up, or whoever it may be. But I don't like that for a team that already has so many holes on the roster, whether that's interior offensive line or potentially defensive tackle. You know, might have to add a safety. I'm not a fan of creating another hole when you have a very capable player there. And again, a lot of this is kind of like people projecting and saying, hey, like, we want to get ahead of ourselves before the return really isn't worth it. But obviously, it looks like it just kind of has that feel that's there. And again, like, the cap savings wouldn't come until like late in the summer anyway. Like, they have to cut him with a post June 1 designation, and that means that, you know, the money is, like, he's off the roster, he's cut from the team, but you don't actually get the money to use until June 2nd. So by then, all the good free agents are going to be used up. I mean, obviously, like, cap savings, the cap space is always good, but how much is it really going to help your team in 2024 is my when you cut X, like, what do you do with the money? Where do you go from there? Does that whole process make you a better team in 2024? Obviously, you're looking long term ahead, but I'm just not a fan of it. Like, me personally, I wouldn't do it, but I'm not in charge.
Yeah, you don't have that burden. Chad, you want to follow up there?
So, Daniel, let me ask you. The trenches are a touchy subject around in Twitter. What's going on? What are you hearing about Connor Williams with Robert Hunt? We got a little bit of news with Teron Armstead. It's been kind of reported that he's kind of be coming back. I think that's expected with the guaranteed money that's on the handle for him. But what are your thoughts on what's going on with the interior guys, the guys in the middle? I think that's probably the most important part of the line for Tua. So what do you think they have from there?
Yeah, well, the Connor situation is tough, because, you know, remember last year, you know, he was trying to get a new contract last year. You know, we signed a 2-year deal. I don't think there was a lot, if any, guaranteed money on that second year. So, you know, he doesn't go to any of the offseason workouts, and he shows up for training camp. All right, so, like, they clearly, like, weren't on the same page with a new deal there. And then he has the ACL. That only makes things tougher, because, you know, they have a – I'm sure that, you know, Connor and his group have a, you know, belief, and they have a price point. And just my opinion, they probably aren't coming off of it very much after that. Whereas the Dolphins are looking at it like, hey, you've played very, very well at center, but now you're coming off an ACL. Like, we don't even know if you're going to be ready for the season, if we don't know how you're going to respond from that. So they're, you know, and my guess is they probably came down from whatever offer they were having, or price they thought had in mind. So my guess is that, like, the ACL and the knee injury only kind of made things harder to navigate. And obviously, you know, Rob Hunt is in a position where he's probably asking for, you know, a top of the market deal, or close to a top of the market deal for a right guard, as he should, because he's played that well the past couple of years. So, I mean, these negotiations are tough. Like, they take a while to come together. Again, a lot of times it's the deadline. You know, remember a couple of years back with Emmanuel Agba, where it looked like he was going to hit the market, and then out of nowhere, like, 5 minutes before free agency starts, we got a deal. So I would say just kind of wait things out. You know, honestly, at the combine is when, like, a lot of moving and shaking happens, and a lot of progress is made. You know, that's, you know, it's an entire week. You know, late nights in Indianapolis. You know, talks between, you know, GMs and agents and whatnot. So I would say give it some time. Let's see what happens after the combine. And obviously, you know, we're getting closer to free agency then, but it's gonna be tough, because, you know, Wilkins, Connor to a lesser extent, and Hunt all have strong arguments to be, you know, near at the top of their position in terms of, you know, pay. And the Dolphins might see it a little bit differently. So it's these are tough negotiations for sure.
So then, Daniel, who who do you have in the draft that you feel can replace Connor? I hate to say it, maybe even Robert Hunt or any other guys that are on the possibility of being moved on from in, once free agency starts.
Yeah, I think like the I think kind of like the hot name right now. We're kind of like the what's the word I'm looking for? The I don't know, the viewer's choice or whatever.
Buzzword, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably Oregon center Jackson Powers Johnson, I believe his name. Yeah. I was just on a conference. I was just on a conference call with NFL Network draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah, and he named him as a guy who would like kind of fits perfectly in that bottom of the first round range, right where the Dolphins are picking at 21. Because he just has that, you know, that perfect blend of size, power, speed that you're looking for at the position. According to Jeremiah, and that was funny. I was talking with somebody and I was like, the thing about these like guys is that, you know, all the fans want him, every Dolphins fan wants him, which means he's probably going to get picked like four picks before they're on the clock. That's just how the way, that's just the way things goes. But there are some other capable guys, but I think that's probably like the name to watch in the first round. You know, if you get to like, you know, 18, 19, he's still on the board. I think that's a guy who could definitely, he kind of projects as that, that day one starter type of guy.
Golly, go ahead, Wally.
Daniel, thank you for your time once again, man. Look, we're gonna have a hole on safety. So there's a guy from there's a relationship with the Lions safety and also Deshaun Elliott and Brandon Jones. Out of all those guys, man, which one you see that fits like maybe what we're gonna go be doing forward? I know it's kind of premature to make a judgment because we really don't know what Weaver's doing, but we're just gonna make a guesstimation based on relationships, I guess, or whatnot. So out of those three safeties, which one you see like fitting with Javon Holland and given our cap situation?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the combination of what Weaver's trying to do, which is he said it's gonna be based off of what he did in Baltimore, and then kind of the familiarity of the coaching staff, I think Deshaun Elliott is a strong candidate to return. You know, he was with Weaver. Oh, you're not a fan of Deshaun?
Hell nah.
Deshaun was solid. Deshaun was very solid.
There's a history there.
He had a crazy tweet in his own site, homie. When I see you, I'ma see you.
Oh, okay. I was about to say.
He said, look, I'll give you the quick background. He had said something about bringing Lamar to the when Lamar was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Somebody in here went freaking nuts.
And yeah, that wasn't the best way to ingratiate himself with the fans at that time.
He hadn't made a snap. He hadn't even had a coke in a smile. He talking about the other girl. Like, what?
Yeah, he and no Dolphins fans was crazy. But, I think that's definitely, like, that it just makes sense. Elliott, you know, Deshaun overlapped with Weaver in 2021 before he went to the Lions. Brian Duker, one of the new secondary coaches, he was with Deshaun in Detroit. So it just kind of makes sense from, like, a familiarity standpoint and, you know, schematics. You know, I wrote in my position review for the safeties a couple of days ago. I think that the Weaver's arrival, you know, doesn't necessarily like mean Brandon, just no space for Brandon Jones. Like, I could see a potential, you know, role for Brandon Jones, because I think that Weaver is going to be a lot more willing to blitz and to kind of lean into like the very like kind of the niche skill sets. So obviously, you know, like we know Brandon Jones is being a great blitzer, and Vic Fangio didn't lean into that at all. I think that Weaver might be a little more willing to. The Ravens played a lot of three safety sets where they had Kyle Hamilton kind of like play everywhere, and then they had Geno Stone and Marcus Williams play like the traditional safety spots. So I think that there is like a potential. I think there's a potential role there, but if you're looking for like a traditional safety to pair with Javon, I think Deshaun makes sense. I think that, you know, he's not gonna, you know, come, you know, with a big market. You know, I think that you can get him at a fairly decent price to re-sign him.
Daniel, I got a quick question, and I'm glad you brought up Weaver. What are you? And I know you're a big defensive guy. What was your initial impression of him, and what like kind of homework or research have you done on him? What he can possibly bring to the team, as far as like bringing in an aggressive nature, I think that we're missing so like really, really badly missing on that defense.
Yeah, so it's funny because obviously you guys know I covered the Ravens for 2 years before coming to Miami, and I actually overlapped with Weaver for like 4 months when he was like on the staff, and I had like one press conference with him before I came over here. So like I obviously I knew of him, and especially still like kind of keeping in touch with I know folks that cover the team, I know folks inside the organization. So I actually spoken to a member of the staff days before. They hired Weaver officially, and he was kind of like gushing. Like the guy was like, "I think this would be a great fit. It'd be great." I like him because first off, like I really like the scheme that the Ravens ran. And he mentioned that he kind of has the duality of seeing like both ends of the spectrum in terms of philosophy. So like if you know, like he played under Rex Ryan, who was blitz. Like we're going blitz and blitz some more, and then he. When he was first in Baltimore, he was coaching with Wink Martindale. He was kind of an offshoot of Rex Ryan, which was like, we're just going to blitz, cover zero, do that all the time. Kind of in that Brian Flores, Josh Boyer mode. But then when Mike McDonald came, it was a little different. It was two high safeties. It was less blitzing. It was a little more diversity in terms of, some of the coverages. So I think he has like the best of both worlds where I think that traditionally it'll probably be, still the two high safety looks. More of the zone looks, but he won't be afraid to blitz. Like I think Vic like was really almost like averse to blitzing, and then it was kind of like at the end of the year when he realized that like, hey, we don't have the horses to get home before. He was like, we have to blitz. Yes. I think that Weaver's going to be a little more willing to, and he mentioned it, like adjust his playbook and adjust his philosophy from week to week based on the opponent. I know he said the defense is going to be the foundation of it is going to be what they did in Baltimore, but I don't want people to say that and think that it's going to be like a carbon copy of what they did in Baltimore. I think that, there were very unique skill sets and the players that they had at Baltimore. And I think that while the Dolphins have players who may be able to fit into those roles, they have unique players in and of itself. So I know like some people have been saying like, like he's going to move around Jalen Ramsey. I don't think he's going to move around Jalen Ramsey every single game. Like I think Jalen Ramsey's still going to be an outside corner, but I think that there are going to be some times where based off the matchup, you might see him move inside. You might see him shadow a guy. He's definitely going to have a more versatile role, but I don't think he's going to be Kyle Hamilton because Kyle Hamilton is his own unique player. I think that, Javon Holland could fit that role, but he's not going to be like doing everything that Kyle Hamilton did. Like, I think that, Weaver's going to come with his own unique ideas of what he wants to do with the special skill sets of his guys. But I'm excited for what he's going to do. My only worry is that I don't, and again, like, I could be wrong because you still have like 8 months till the season, and 9 months till the season starts. My worry, or it's 6 months, something like that, whatever. My worry is that they're not going to have near the level of defensive talent that they had last year. They had a lot. I mean, I know that they were hurt, but when they were like rolling, they had a lot. They had guys at every level of the defense. They had multiple guys at every level of the defense. My worry is that between Jalen and Bradley, they're going to be brought along slowly. I know that, they're working hard, but we know how the team does with guys coming off injury, especially under McDaniel the past couple of years. They don't want a Byron Jones situation. They don't want any setbacks. They're going to bring them along slowly, and if that means that they got to wait an extra week or two, if that means they got to start on PUP so to make sure that they're really good to go, like they'll do that. Like they're not going to rush anybody back. So between Bradley and Jalen coming back from their injuries, between Van Ginkel potentially leaving, between X potentially being cut, and all the other potential defections and guys leaving and whatnot, obviously they're gonna have some cap space. They're gonna bring guys in. They're gonna re-sign some guys. But I just don't think it's gonna be as talented of a defense as it was this past season. So my question is, can Weaver do more with less, with a less talented? That's my. I think that the scheme will be solid. I think that everything he's saying is perfect. But also Vangio did a really pretty good job. But he also had a lot of guys to work with. I don't think Weaver's going to have as much to work with in 2024. And that's my fear, that the scheme might be solid. But, hey, they say it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and the Joes. I think the X's and O's are going to be straight. But I don't know if they're going to have all the guys to execute it. And that's why, you know, I'm just fascinated with what they do, you know, on both sides of the ball this offseason in terms of adding talent. Like, they could run it back theoretically, but I don't think that that's good enough to make a run in the AFC. Like, they have to get better. So how do you get better? How do you add more talent and make sure that you are a more talented team than you were last year? That's my question.
No, you know what? That's the beauty of coaching, because again, I've seen where there's a lot of talent on teams and they just fail because there wasn't a good motivator or the scheme was wrong. So we'll see how, and you would know more than us because you've followed them before and you kind of know like what, and you've talked to people in Baltimore about how he works and how he communicates with players. And we've read some things here and there. So it's going to be curious to see how that plays out. Obviously we do have a couple months to let that play out. I have a question and it kind of dovetails into a question from a viewer that dovetails into my next question. I got Ruski's asking, basically, this is like a hot stove question. It has been. He's a lightning rod.
Oh, here, man. We got to do a Tua question, man.
Yes, man. Believe me. It's
y'all
it's,
trying to have Dolphins fans on my head.
We almost got through without one, man. We almost got through without one.
See, I'm trying to have a quiet offseason, enjoy my time to myself.
Nope.
Y'all about to make me the main character on Twitter. That's what y'all trying to do.
Blame the Yankees shirt.
Oh, blame the Yankee shirt. Of course, you have 27 reasons to blame me. That's fine.
Shut up.
Okay, we can't all be winners, bro. It's okay.
Shut it up. You live
anyway. Listen, so
be like Chris Greer and be political with the answer, man. Don't get yourself in a box.
Hey, man, it is what it is. So, okay, I know I speak for everybody here. We're sold. Okay, some people for whatever reason, agenda or not, they think that he's not the guy, or they have to replace him with Justin Fields or whatever the hot name is. Okay, I hate to ask you this question, but for purposes of completion and just catering to everybody, make sure that we satisfy everybody out there watching. What do you think?
Don't end up like Deshaun Elliott now. Don't end up.
So here's my deal. Here's my deal, and I may have said this last time I was on. When I came to the beat, I didn't have any opinion on Tua. I don't watch a lot of college football, so like I saw the national championship game. That's pretty much what I saw from Tua. I did not watch. I did watch little to no Dolphins football before covering the team, so I really came in like clean slate. I don't know anything about Tua. I'm just watching him for the first time. And I've seen a player that has gotten better, that has, especially in, you know, the first year, the 2021 year when I first got here, he did more with less. And really, really the main thing is that he's gotten better every season and I've seen like tangible improvement. My thing with Tua is that he has his strengths. He has the things that he's good at, and he has the things that whether you want to call them weaknesses, deficiencies, things that he will never be. He's never going to be, in terms of skill set, he's never going to be a Lamar Jackson. He's never going to be a Josh Allen. He's never going to be a Patrick Mahomes. So if you think that he needs to be that type of player in order for the Dolphins to get over the hump, you're never going to be satisfied. I don't complain and I don't talk about Tua needing to do more off script and be a little mobile and run more, because that's not his game. Like I obviously McDaniel was like, yeah, he can get better with extending plays and whatnot, but like he said, he's never gonna be Lamar Jackson. So like we shouldn't even, like, the discussion about Tua shouldn't like really be about that. It should be that based off the current skill set that he has, and the trajectory that you believe he's on, can he improve into a point where he can take this team on an extended run in the AFC Championship? I'm of the belief that he's going to be. I'm not sure how much better he can get, but I've seen teams with worse quarterback play and worse quarterbacks get to an AFC Championship game and get to a Super Bowl. I've seen that. I look at, and I hate to use this example, but like I look at the San Francisco 49ers and I see a quarterback in Brock Purdy, who I think Tua is just as talented as, and probably more talented than, but obviously they have a lot of things going right for Brock Purdy in terms of his supporting cast. The question, and I mentioned this, kind of alluded to this yesterday, the thing is, when you commit the type of deal that Tua is probably, and his side is probably seeking, it ties you to the player for multiple years, and it just naturally inhibits your ability to build around them. It shrinks the margin for error in terms of you have to hit in the draft. You can't have first round bust and second round bust and early round bust. You're not gonna have as many salary cap as much salary cap space to spend. So the question is, if you do commit to Tua for multiple years, are you confident that you're gonna get that sustained level of play? Like honestly, like if we put it in a vacuum, I know that the season didn't end the way that anyone expected, especially the way Tua struggled in the last month or so of the season. But if you take his season as a whole, it was a really good season. It was a really good season. It was good enough for him to go to the Pro Bowl. It was good enough for him to lead the NFL in passing. It was good enough for him to be top three, top five in passer rating. Like in a vacuum, it was a really good season. But the question is, if you commit to Tua essentially for 3 to 4 years before you can get out the contract, are you confident that you're going to get that sustained level of play? And the big thing is that when you don't have as much wiggle room to go out and get a Tyreek Hill or get a Tyreek Hill type player or get a Jalen Ramsey type player, are you confident that when the margin for error kind of slims, he can carry you? That's the question. And I don't know that. I think Tua's a very good player, and I'll say this. I think that this past season, and it's a little bit of hyperbole because, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 years. But this, more or less, this might be the most talented team that Tua's played on in terms of in the NFL. Like, I don't know if they're ever going to get a roster with two Pro Bowl-level pass rushers, two Pro Bowl or close to Pro Bowl-level cornerbacks, and the best wide receiver in the NFL and the best number two wide receiver in the NFL. Like, I don't know if they're always gonna have that in years to come. Right. It's only gonna get tougher if you commit a top of the market deal to them. And the question is, like, if we're being just realistic, who do you replace him with? Like, you mentioned Justin Fields. Like, that's like, we're not even gonna entertain that. Like, that's goofy, in my opinion. Are you doing Kirk Cousins? That's goofy to me too. A 35-year-old coming off of Achilles, that's goofy to me. So unless you have a clear option to replace him, I mean, what are we even discussing it for? Like, it's cool for we're just kind of filling space in the offseason. Like, let's be real. Let's talk realistically. So he'll be the quarterback in 2024, whether it's on an extended deal, I'm not sure. Because I think there's some legitimate hurdles in the negotiations. But he's going to be the quarterback. But the question is, like, how much better is he going to get? And, with a roster that might not be as good as it was this past year, is that enough? I personally, and this is big picture, I don't want to, sound the alarm and, the sky is falling. But I'm very, concerned about the offseason and how they're going to approach it. Now, if you ask Chris Greer, he's going to say, we plan for this months and months ahead. But me personally, the nobody who just sits on over the cap all day and messes around with the numbers and kind of knows the state of the team and their weaknesses, I am concerned that this is not going to be as talented of a roster as it was this past year. And this was an 11-win team with the roster, with the injuries and whatnot. I'm concerned that they're not going to be able to build off of this season and put the roster in a better shape to make a run in 2024.
I agree. And listen, before we move on to the next question, this is a perfect answer that one of our viewers, Irving, sent this to us. And this is a fact that I think everybody should follow suit. Let it go. Just let it go. He's going to be here. Move on.
Yeah, that's anyway. I don't even like talking to her, honestly, because it's just kind of boring. And it's just kind of boring at this point because
it's tiring, bro.
A lot of the talk isn't rooted in reality, which is why I don't really entertain. He's going to be the quarterback in 2024, barring anything kind of crazy. let's see, because I don't think it's all on him. I didn't even mention that. I don't even think it's all on him. Like, I've talked to a lot of people who are smarter than me. I've talked to people, like, frankly, like, in the building. And it's not just on Tua. I think that McDaniel would Tua man. I mean, I don't know, not even Tua man. I think that, you know, if we asked him, if I asked him next week, I think he would say that he needs to grow more as a play caller. I think there's a lot of spot times where maybe Tua wasn't put in the best position, the players weren't put in the best position. So it's not all on Tua. I think that there's mutual growth that needs to be seen, you know, for this Dolphins offense to, you know, not only like, you know, be good against the bottom dwellers, but really stand up against some of the best teams in the NFL. It's not just Tua.
Yeah, we've been fighting a good fight for a long time, man. It's to a point now where I feel like Tua's done enough to, for me, validate how we all felt about him, and then he just has to, you know, continue to take that next step. Just like with Mike McDaniel, right? Like, he's got the back-to-back playoff wins. It's not enough, but it's a good start to show at least you are, you know, treading and heading in the right direction, and you got something good. So
the honeymoon is over, though. The honeymoon is over, though. I will say that. Like, it's time for some results. Like, it's time for some results, though. Like, when I be like, we got to see some playoff wins soon, like now. So
earlier you were alluding to the fact that Chubb and Phillips would be coming back from injury. How much of a priority should that be for the team this season? And as well as with the pass catching situation, we kind of have Eazy-E coming back from injury. You have Claypool, who they may or may bring back. Berrios, kind of, we don't know what's happening with him. But outside of Tyreek and Waddle, we really didn't have much there last season. So I really wanted to ask you, what do you think should be a bigger priority for the team this offseason? Would you say getting that third option solidified or ensuring that you have that depth to, you know, account for the fact that may take a little time to get back?
Jesus. I mean, I would say outside linebacker, just because, like, you don't even know if those guys can be ready for the start of the season. Like, if you don't really make any major moves at wide receiver, like, you still have Waddle, you still have Tyreek and Waddle. Like, that's still pretty good. Like, you can work with that, obviously. But you, like, don't even know. Like, I mean, I guess based off, like, this is not sourcing, but just based off, like, the normal recovery time for a Achilles compared to a ACL, and then when they injured themselves, I think that Phillips would technically be later on. Like, he'd probably return after Chubb, because I know Chubb got hurt, like, the second last game of the year. But ACLs, like, guys usually can come back in, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10 months. Like, Brandon Jones tore his knee up in late October, and he was ready for training camp. Now, he wasn't, like, fully practicing in training camp, but he was medically cleared for training camp. So you look like a month later for Chubb. I think that, you know, it's possible, but Phillips with the Achilles, that's like legitimately like a year long deal. So that's like, you're talking about like pup territory. So I think you need some guys who can just like step in and, you know, hold the fort down until those guys come back. And obviously Van Ginkle is a free agent. But I think you can find like some kind of cheap, like, I think that, you know, especially with the Weaver connection, like whether it's Jadeveon Clowney, maybe you get a little reunion with Kyle Van Noy. I'm not sure I don't know how the fan base feels about him, because, you know, he kind of left and said some things. But I think that it was a more of a flow thing with Van Noy. I heard on a podcast it was more of a flow thing, maybe. So I don't know. Like, maybe if you get one of those guys to come, and, you know, like, they can give you some good snaps. You got to get two edge rushers in, you know, at least. Whether that's Van Ginkle and somebody, whether that's two outside guys, whether that's an outside guy and you draft somebody, you got to get two edge rushers in, because you just don't know what is going to happen with those recoveries from those injuries. And then wide receiver, I don't even want to like label it wide receiver. I would just say secondary pass catcher. Like, whether that's a wide receiver or a tight end, you know, they got to bring somebody in. I think that there's various avenues to do that, maybe more so in the draft. Because, you know, I was on the conference call, and I was told that the Jeremiah said there's great depth for wide receiver. He was like, there's going to be some really interesting names in like the third round, maybe the fourth round. So that was kind of like where they got Ezukama. And obviously, like, I think very highly of Eric, but, you know, like,
potential is that's all it is. Like, you can't really, you know, can't really count on potential. Like, you know, so whether you want to get, you know, a second tier free agent and get a guy that you know can be a solid number three, because like, you got to look at it like, they need a legitimate number three wide receiver for several reasons. Because first off, teams are keying on Tyreek and Waddle, and they've created schemes and coverages to take those guys out. But the Dolphins like intentionally limit those guys' snaps, and they also like, you know, they because they are targeted so much, they kind of got these nicks and bruises at the end of the season. I think Tyreek only played like 60-70% of the snaps or something like that. Between the injury and then between just the fact that like they just like stagger his reps so much, he's not playing a lot of like when he's on the field, they throw it to him a lot. There's also a lot of snaps where he's not on the field. So they need like a capable, a legitimate number three wide receiver or a legitimate tight end who can kind of complement all those guys when they're on the field. But I would say outside linebacker first, because you're essentially like, I'm not even counting on them. Like right now, I'm not even counting on those two guys to be ready for the start of the season. So you're kind of looking at it like you have two holes at edge defender right now.
Yeah, it's tough because when they were banged up towards the end of the season, it was really ugly for us. So I don't want to start the season off with that same thing going. And but the same way when Waddle and Tyreek weren't there, it was just like no one could separate. It was like they were just manning us up. So, you know, it's I feel like they got to try to address both things, but they got to be crafty because we don't have a lot of cap space and on everything else. So, but yeah. Go ahead, Wally. My bad.
No, it's Coach. It's Coach. I think he's going to ask Junior's question.
Yeah. Listen, one of our guys, Junior, had to take off, but he asked me to ask you a question on his behalf. You're Chris Greer. You're on the clock. Who are you taking with the first round pick?
Oh, man.
Wow.
That's tough, man, because like they really have so many holes. Like that's why I said like I'm very worried. Like they have so many holes. Like honestly, you can make an argument for them to take. I won't say tight end because like I'm not sure if there's a guy at number 21 that would be of good value or like really fit. But you can make an argument for them to take wide receiver, guard/center, defensive tackle, depending on what happens with Wilkins, outside linebacker, cornerback and safety. Like there's like six positions where like if you told me in a couple months like they come away with any of those positions, I'd say yeah, I could see it.
Who was your pick, man? Who was your pick?
That's what I'm saying. I put him on the spot, but
it's kind of early because I haven't really like read too much on these guys, watched a lot of these guys.
Look, I'll tell you what. Let's put a pin in that, and if you're willing. A little closer to the draft. Let's bring you back.
Don't do JPJ. Don't do JPJ.
Can I do a cop out and say I trade back? Honestly,
yes.
Because I don't know. I don't think they have a third round pick.
That's what we all doing. That's what we all want to do. We all want to trade back either in the first or the second round. Pick up.
Yeah. If I can trade back to the top of the second round, and then we kind of double dip, and maybe we get a fourth in addition to that.
Yeah, because we don't have those right now.
Yeah,
we just the tampering and then one for the Chubb in the Chubb trade. For the tampering.
If the 21st guy like isn't all that much different to me than the 34th guy, and then I can pick up an extra fourth or third. I don't know how the trade value chart works.
But it makes
I wouldn't be opposed to that because they gotta get some young talent. And like the Ramsey trade, the Chubb trade, the Tyreek trade were cool. But one could argue that it was the byproduct of the team not drafting well, and it's put them in a spot where they're just so top heavy. I'd be shocked if they traded the first round pick for a player this year, because it just where do you fit that cap hit if it's like a top guy? Like you need to get some young contributors.
You need to fill in, yeah, because you can't pay everybody.
They've only had one contributor from their draft class the last 2 years, and that's Devon Achane.
But this is what I'm saying. Remember we were talking about Liam Eikenberg, right? This is his moment of shine. This is why you flip him for a fifth or a fourth. This is his moment of shine. This is his moment of shine. You said he bet himself into some money. No. This is his moment of shine.
This is what you could. The only guy in the roster right
bro,
now.
Bro, you're not getting a third or a fourth for that guy. I'm sorry.
Can you get a six? Can I get a damn fiend? A six?
I mean, for a six, you might as well keep him. Like,
no, you're not.
I'm so serious.
I mean, serious. You might get a fourth or a fifth. Give me a fourth. Come on now. Give me a fourth, man. I'll give me a
That's special fleecing by Chris Greer if you get a fourth.
I'm saying.
Bro, come on.
I mean, hey, he's worked some miracles. Like, at you. Hey, I didn't think you were going to get Jalen Ramsey for a third-round pick and Hunter Long, but.
Bro, yeah. we flipped Devonta Parker off to the Patriots. Come on, man. Hey, listen, I don't put it past him, especially if you can sell somebody. Look, man, hey, he played all five positions. He's gridded out well. He fine as well.
Man, you got a job in sales, bro. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you something, man. Listen, you put that tape on, he gonna look good out there.
Never mind. Don't get each other. Yeah, I seen
that. I'm gonna tell you this: you did it's a wide receiver. There's a guy, LSU, Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
That's a guy. I would. I think he could. He brings something different and unique to what we currently have. And I think if you were to. If you were to get a guy like that, it would cost you close to $10 million, if not more, in free agency for a guy with that type of talent, you know what I mean, and capability. So I just feel like what we're alluding to, if you can get somebody some cheap labor, I think he can provide you some production, and I think it will allow you to free up Tyreek and Waddle, especially Tyreek to play in the slot a lot more, and I think he can get some advantages on some safeties and linebackers to work. You know what I mean? You can get Tyreek on the third corner a little bit more often. What does that look like? You know, but I mean, it might be a little bit of.
How about DB?
I'm a luxury pick, but I mean, with DB, with X, we don't know what happened with Cam Smith. If you could shore up those questions there and get a capable high end talent there, it wouldn't be a bad thing. I mean, Chris Greer loves DBs.
Yeah, the thing about wide receiver, I mean, like, if he's the best, like, I'm not really sure, like, I mean, I'm not sure if Greer, like, we've been here for a couple of years. So, like, I don't know, if, like, how Greer feels about, like, best player available. I know, like, the Ravens, it was, like, that's what it was, more or less. Like, best player available, more or less. So, if, like, they kind of go by that philosophy and he's on the board, it'd be tough. Like, let's say you get, like, you know, Brian Thomas and, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson is off the board. And it's, like, there's some, like, lesser-rated guard centers who, like, maybe aren't, you know, that at that point on your board. But they feel like that immediate need. You know, that's kind of where you talk about like positional value.
Need. Yeah, they're gonna reach.
That's for available. Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to it because I do think that you know, in addition, like I think that part of what they need to do on offense is diversify the scheme and personnel. I think that you know they became too siloed into specifics. You know, in terms of like the type of offense that they ran. I think they need to diversify the skill set in terms of, you know, where they throw the ball, the types of players they're throwing the ball to, and the types of schemes that they're running, especially in the run game. So in the passing game, like, it'd be tough to be like, all right, we're drafting this wide receiver who's going to be our number three wide receiver for probably the next year or two. Like, it's tough to kind of, like maybe sell that, you know, in the immediate future. But, you know, when you look at long-term, you're always projecting for the future as well. I think that could be a really strong move. But like if I had to like I don't know like off the top of my head, like I would love to see them come away with you know a starting offensive lineman at least like in the first round. I would love to see them come away with a starting offensive lineman because it just feels like they're gonna lose one or two of those like guys, you know, between you know Connor Hunt, Williams. Like I just have a hard time seeing them like retaining all two, let alone all three. So I'd love to see them get an interior offensive lineman. But if they take a wide receiver in the first round, like I wouldn't be mad at it. I mean, they're probably gonna score, you know, instead of 30 points a game, 35. Like, hey, man, you scoring more points. I wouldn't be opposed to it. But I think it'd be kind of a tough sell, especially with some of like the bigger needs on the team right now.
Tua's getting rid of the ball in what 2.3, 2.4 seconds, man. Hey,
man, that's what I'm saying. We need to get an offensive lineman so we don't have to throw it 2.4 seconds. That's how I feel about it.
I agree with that. Hey Daniel, listen. It's been awesome. I'm sure you got other things to do, man. I appreciate you. The only thing I'll say is that hopefully, if you have the time, I'd love to get you back on with us closer to the draft because I know that you went to, you spent some time, you know, at the
Senior Bowl.
At the Senior Bowl. Yep, yep. So, you know, as we get closer, maybe we can.
I'm a guru, and I have guru takes. Is I'm a guru. Bro, these guys,
this, bro. Will you be at the combine, Daniel? Are you going to the combine?
Most definitely. No? I'll be there all next week. Yeah.
Yo.
I'm a guru. I'm a guru. You go. All right. Don't hate on me, man. You're going to see my takes.
I was going to say, none of y'all brought up the who was it that said that Sealer was going to have more sacks than Wilkins?
Nobody he's not here.
Oh, okay.
He's not here.
I forgot who mentioned that, and I was scared they were going. I was going to get pressed. I was scared. Yo, I was like, I hope he's not going to get out.
He's lucky. He's lucky. He had a window. But look. He moved on to. He has a different scenario now. He's actually a Christian Wilkins apologist. Right now, he wants to get Christian Wilkins paid. It's insane. He has so many agendas.
Go ahead.
All right, cool. Now I'm gonna say, if you factor in the fact that Chubb and Phillips are dealing with some injuries and ABG and Flux, I mean, that might strengthen the case to bring Wilkins back. You know what I mean? You don't want to lose 40 sacks worth of production all in one offseason and your starting corner. Like, that's a lot to replace. And like,
I think Wilkins has a lot of leverage right now. I don't think he wants the tag, but I don't think the Dolphins want to put the tag on. Like, I think, like I said, in a perfect situation, I don't think they want to give him the tag. I think Wilkins has a lot of leverage. And if I'm him, I'm not budging off whatever. I mean, I put it this way, whatever he was asking for last year, like the price done increased since then. So if I'm Wilkins, I have no reason to budge off of whatever price I'm asking for. And if you want to pay the, if you want to do the franchise tag and then make it harder to keep all your guys, that's not my problem. So,
man, listen, he's going to look beautiful in a Minnesota Viking jersey.
Oh yeah. Teaming up with Flo.
He's going to be out there doing his little splits and all that.
Hey, listen, the guy that you were talking about, French, he, you know, obviously he's a big Zach Sealer fan. So, quick story. A couple of the guys flew out to DC for the Commanders game.
I wasn't at DC.
Wally was not in DC. Nobody else in DC. These guys, they flew out there. They watched the game, and coincidentally, he sat with Zach Sealer's family.
Oh wow!
So we were like, "Yo!" So he was sending us pictures and videos and this and that, and we told him, "So, like, did you make a connection there? Let's try to get Zach on the show, you know, whatever." No. He's like, "Bro, you had your opportunity.
You're working, man.
He's like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, what are you doing?"
He's not a real fan.
Right next to his family, out of all the seats in the stadium, on the road, like. That was insane, man.
That was insane. Family out here, man. He
got the ball.
Yes, indeed.
All right, man. Listen, I will let you go. I know. Thank you for the time, bro. I know it's much appreciated and all the insight. And again, hopefully we'll link up before the draft if you got some time. We're really interested to hear what your observations are and all that with the guys coming in.
Nah, most definitely, we'll make it happen for sure.
All right, my boy. Thanks again, man.
Thanks for having me tonight.
Thank you too.